Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Pardon Will Live. It's Sunday night. It's 8, 7 Central. Every Sunday, on time, 8, 7 Central. That's what I say. That's my motto. Never late, ever. Except for today. I'm joking. I'm late every time. Every time I'm late. Never on time. But I was also told by the Smithsonian that being on time, being punctual, that's a sign of whiteness or white culture. And due to my complexion, trying to fight that with my own DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion standards by showing up late as per usual. Defeat that stuff. Anyway, I am fully aware that there is the biggest American sports event going on currently right now. If you're watching this live, God bless you for not participating in American pastime, the greatest American pastime that we have. I was like, I'm going to do a live anyway. Obviously, I'm a huge sports fan, love football, love what's going on right now, whoever's playing. I'm doing a live, not even watching it. I'm going to talk about that tonight. We're going to get into a little bit of what my thoughts are on the football, on the footballs, on the sports balls. I won't diss it too much, I promise. But before we get into that, I want to have a big announcement. Well, I'm going to have a big announcement. I'm going to tell you a little bit about what I have going on this week. So tomorrow, big day for me. I have published a book, and it is available tomorrow, Monday, February 12th. Now, see if I can zoom in on this. It's called By Every Meaningless Measure, A Book of Art and Poetry by yours truly. Hence the title at the bottom, David Lilley, Published Poet. I am officially a published poet. And I'm going to read you the back real quick. So this is going to go on sale tomorrow. Maybe if you stick around by the end of the live stream, I'll give you a little bit of a teaser update. You might be able to purchase this tonight. And I'm also going to read the shortest poem in here because I know how much everybody loves poetry, especially modern poetry. Modern poetry is awesome. It's no complaints whatsoever. Anyway, if you didn't know this, I'm an artist and a poet. This is about the accumulation of the past decade. I compiled all my fine art. And I wrote the back as well, so I'm a bit of a writer as well. I'm going to read this to you so you can get an idea of what this book is, so you can go out there and buy it. It's an eclectic collection of fine art and rhythmic poetry orchestrated in a cohesive tale of glory, pride, failure, and redemption. The art focuses on the universal principles of truth, while the poetry explores the universal power of experiential nature. Both forms of expression are intertwined throughout the book to carry you through deep meditations of the world we all experience and the reality that forms it. So basically, all of my fine art over the past decade, I selected the fews that I wanted to go into the book. They're all orchestrated with scripture, and each painting has a scripture with it, and to correlate with that scripture to kind of teach its own lesson. And then throughout it is intertwined with my poetry throughout the past decade. And it works as a tale going from a glorious beginning to a lower sunk down middle, and then in a redemption towards the end. So anyway, if you're watching this or listening to this and it's Monday already, you can go to Amazon and type in by every meaningless measure. You can get the title wrong. By every meaningless measure, it'll pop up there, or go to pardonwill.com tomorrow. If you stick around towards the end, I'll give you a special little, you can get it now. Anyway, super excited about that. Super excited about publishing this book. Going to be promoting that throughout the next however long. Anyway, speaking of poets, there's this old Roman poet named Juvenal. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing Juvenal correct. And no, I know what you're thinking. I'm not talking about the early 90s R&B rapper, Juvenal. Although, a bit of a poet himself, I would have to say. Love that guy. Good hits. This poet was different. He brought up the term, and it's been repeated over decades and decades, about bread and circuses. And basically, his point, it was a cultural commentary or a political commentary. He intertwined both. That the higher-ups, the elites of the society, would give the peasants bread and circuses to distract them, to keep them from paying attention to the societal decay around them, to kind of pull them into a sphere basically to subdue them. I almost tried to pick a word that wasn't going to make sense. So subdue them and draw their attention away from the things that they really should be paying attention about. This is what he was writing about. And it's been commonly used, especially today. I think it might have been trending on Twitter. It's commonly used as a notion saying this is a thing that's orchestrated to distract the people away from what they really should be looking at over here. It's a bit of a red herring. And while I do agree with some of that commentary, I don't fully get on board with every time there's something entertaining going on, like the sports ball, it's bad, and they're trying to keep you from looking at this thing over here. I don't actually sign up with that completely, and I'm going to tell you why. Not all entertainment is an orchestration of the deep state to get you to not look at this thing over here. Now, while I'm not a sports guy, I played sports growing up. I'm kind of in that realm. Like, it's fun to play, but I'm never going to watch it. I can't just watch people do things. I like to do things myself. It seems asinine to me, but I do understand the concept behind it, especially when it comes to team building. Now, growing up, I grew up in Southeast Texas, and down there in high school and all that stuff, the whole town gathered around the high school team, their football team. And it was a big thing. Like, you had town pride. It was actually like an icon of the town or the city that you lived in. And so everyone was all about the football team. You didn't have to be in high school. If you lived in this town, it was a big deal. That extended to college towns specifically. And this is the South, and this isn't just the South. Well, this was at the South at the time. College towns are a big thing when it comes to sports. But living up north, it's the same thing with big cities. Like, Buffalo has the Bills, you know, the New York Jets. Any major city should have a sports team. And I think that is specifically to rally the community around, for them to enjoy and be proud of their city. Now, while you can say, well, that may or may not be true, actually, I don't think it is. I think people love the New York Giants, but don't really care about New York, unless they can correlate those two. I don't think that's a big, where I think it's supposed to build community and strengthen the community around. I don't know if it always works that way. I think the bread and circus concept still is too far. I don't think the New York Yankees were put into place to make sure people had pride in New York. But I do understand the communal aspects, because even in a small town with, like, football teams, our football team, I was in band, and I played all the other sports that no one paid attention to, like track and cross country and soccer. Oh my God, I heard about a whole soccer ad during a football thing and the uproar online for that. It was a weird thing for me because I wasn't never into football, but the whole town loved it. And I think it has a deep... I think it's just tribalism. I think tribalism is such a useful tool for building community that I think it's almost necessary. This is why I don't consider, you know, American football, Super Bowl, to be completely a bread and circus style thing. Even though I don't participate in it, and I put in the top, my circus would be like Deadpool. Like, that was the thing. If out of all the Super Bowl, the Deadpool trailer dropping, that was the only thing that I was like, now that I'll watch, and I'll talk about that, and we'll go over the trailer later on. But I don't always think it has to be such a... Oh, this is what I was saying about the tribalism thing. Tribalism is great when it is there to build the community. I can see the utility of having a tribal concept, and I think communities are necessary to have that. That one centered focus, and you could break that down into anything. I mean, especially, let's talk about politics for a minute. Like, this is from the outside looking in, and I can say that pretty squarely because I've never really been a part of affiliated with any party, not even a third party, nothing like that. I'm independent for a reason, and I've been that way all my life. I've never signed up for, like, if you were to ask me what my favorite football team is, I don't have one. I could care absolutely less. Favorite baseball team? Don't care. You could be like, what's your favorite Marvel character? Now, that I might have. But again, my Marvel, I'm not even a part of the, oh, I'm a Marvel camp and screw DC, or I'm the DC camp, or however that stuff works. I'm not even a part of that. And the best example of boiling all the tribalism down when it comes to, like, cultures is the Libertarian Party. I think it's absolutely genius, because the Libertarian Party, is so in disarray all the time. Matter of fact, this is such a common meme where everybody has their kryptonite or the thing that they hate the most. And when it comes to libertarians, it's always other libertarians. So there's no cohesive collective when it comes to libertarianism outside of absolute freedom. And that is their core thing. But because that's such a central principle, it's not like, it kind of works as, like, a football team would be. Like, if you were in, let's pick a rent, Denver, and you're like, I hate everyone in Denver, but the Broncos, man, love the Broncos. And for one day out of the week when they're playing, you see another person with a Broncos hat or whatever. You're like, all right, that's my boy. I would say that's a lot like political parties, or not especially the Libertarian Party, because out of all the topics that you can come up with, you will find something you disagree with them. And when it comes to libertarians, they will harp on that disagreement to the end of the day. And it's just a normal thing. Like that's a normal, they have one basic principle, and that is freedom and liberty. And then outside of that, it's all warring factions. So I say this because as somebody who's outside of most things, don't have a tribe, if I had a community, it would be the Christian one. I would be part of Christianity. So that would be my tribe. But even then, again, it's broken apart outside of, very similar to libertarian, the gospel. So if you center everything on the gospel, that would be where the community comes in line. And I bring up Christianity being in trouble because we just saw a commercial during the Super Bowl. I don't know if you caught that. I'm not going to pull it up. If you want to, you can look it up. But basically, it was I have almost no mixed feelings about this commercial, except for one. I am happy that there is some aspect of religiosity involved in cultural things. Now, how they played that hand, I think I know where they were going. I don't know who paid for it. I'm not even sure why they did it. I'm not even sure if a message got across. I don't think anybody watched that Super Bowl ad with Jesus washing, or people washing the feet and being like, Jesus doesn't like hate. He washes people's feet. No context to that concept. If you weren't a Christian, you were like, Jesus, that's right. They're right. Jesus doesn't like hate. He likes to wash. Wait, feet? What, has he got a feet thing? Like, what is this? If you didn't understand the scriptural reference of it, it would make no sense to you. But if you do understand the scriptural reference of it, I think very few people would sit back and go, yeah, that's exactly what he was talking about. Just wash everyone's feet. That's totally normal. That's what Jesus was. Now, I understand the basic concept. Is it is true. Jesus is the servant king, comes down, and he stands in the gap and plays a part that you would not expect a king to play, like washing the feet, especially of his disciples when they are undeserving of it. And so this was a big part of the Bible to explain Jesus and where he is in the situation of in the reference of the world and his disciples and the people that he's come to serve. It is a very weird thing to play that social justice card of being like, we don't need to hate each other. All of your identity and all of your beliefs and the way you feel, those can be completely eradicated if you wash the feet of that person. We saw a few different instances. I think abortion was brought up in that commercial. The migrant crisis was brought up in the court, maybe in the same thing. I think it was like an abortion clinic with like a hotel in the back with people like with luggage or whatever, different religions, one family washing, a Muslim family's feet. It was a weird amalgamation, almost as if everything that you think is important to you goes away. Your ideals of what humanity should be, your ideas of how society should function in a proper way, all of that doesn't matter because as long as you see, what I'm assuming they were going for is the Imago Dei. You see other people as the image of Christ, or as the image of God, got made in God's image, then you can see people differently. I think that's where they were going with it. But it felt so social justice-y that it felt like pandering. It felt like, give the Christians a little something so they'll shut up with it. And so I think it was, the message was so blurred out that it didn't do what it was meant to do. And it almost feels like a timing issue. Like if you were to play that commercial in Super Bowl in 96, I don't think it would have near as much stigma as it does playing it today, because we are wrought with social justice algorithmic like feeds in your life of going, everything you're wrong, and this is why you're wrong, and this is why we need this, and we need reform, and we need this, and we constantly need to change, we need progress, we need, people are hurting, can't you see? And because that's such a overwashed feeling in our culture, to go, hey, that whole Jesus thing, this is what Jesus would do. He'd be out on the street marching for women's health care is what they call it. Jesus doesn't like child sacrifice. Sorry to tell you, I'm pretty sure that's probably not in it. But I understand, again, I understand the sentiment. But it's a weak and it was a poor excuse of taking something as beautiful as the scene in the Gospels of Jesus washing the feet and turning it into a crappy Super Bowl ad. Anyway, that was the Jesus part. But going back to the bread and circuses, this is why I think it is important to have entertainment. And I'm gonna go easy on you Super Bowl fans, football fans. I don't think it's bad to like football. I don't think it's bad to be a fan of sports. And the reason I say that is you ever been to a party? I'm going to use a weird stereotypical idea. You ever been to a party and there's always that one person that just brings the mood down, just ruins everything. I feel like that. I feel like if you were to never look at anything, no entertainment, no football, no sports, nothing, and you were just straight into the political realm. And if you go on Twitter and you look at some of the political commentators, you'll see them doing this exact same thing right as we speak. Well, right as I'm talking right now, you can just stop watching this up on Twitter and look up any political commentator and they'll be like, why are you paying attention to football? Don't you see the MK Ultra? Yes. And I understand the point. But they're like that person at the party who is constantly is like, hey, you guys having fun over there? Let me ruin this real quick. I don't think anyone in America is what, I might be wrong about this. I don't think most of America took this Sunday to go, hey, we're going to sit down and we're going to watch sports for a minute. And whatever Uncle Jerry says over there about, you know, whatever political party, hush up, Jerry. It's about whoever's playing tonight, the Chiefs and San Francisco, whoever they are, 49ers. See, I'm getting better at this. Shut up, Jerry. We're not going to talk politics. We're going to talk football and Taylor Swift because she's there. And half, to be honest, half the room is there at your Super Bowl party because of Taylor Swift. And just give it to them. And that's another thing. People are like, she's ruining our football game. No, she's not. She's fine. She's just a part of the circus. Like, it's a circus. And as long as you see it as that, like, there is no point in time where I'm watching a Marvel movie and being like, profound, changing my life. This is as good as like a Jordan Peterson lecture. I'm not doing that. I'm not. No, there are some great parts of storytelling. Be like, I can see the moral of that story, and I love that. That's great. But there, I don't think anybody's watching football and forgetting the fact that this particular football dinner, the wings and the pizza, probably set them back another week of their paycheck. I don't think anybody is ignoring the fact that there's war. Tucker just interviewed Putin. The Biden is full on in dementia. I don't think anyone is forgetting that. If anything, they're just putting things off, the serious part off, putting it off for a few hours to just watch a game. And again, I hate sports and I understand this concept. It's the same time as if you're in a serious situation or you're in a serious conversation, to bring a little levity into that conversation with a joke or a sense of humor or some lightheartedness, that does way more than just going directly into the issue and constantly harping on that. There is something very profound to in the middle. Here's a good example. There was a war, and I don't remember what it was, but I think it was World War II. Don't know my history of wars, but there was a point in time in World War II where the both sides stopped fighting for Christmas, and I guess they played soccer. This could be a legendary tale. It could be a rumor. It could be myth. Whatever. It doesn't matter. The point behind it is there needs to be a break. You need that break. And for me, it's not football. It's Marvel. My break was watching the Deadpool 3 trailer. Like, that was like, okay, there is something out of this. It's not constant depression and political. I mean, it's an election year. God knows we need sports ball. Like, God knows we need it. Because if your life isn't consumed with constant, here's the next, and it's even worse now with the internet and with, I don't know if it was always like this. There's always a new headline every day. We, even me doing a live, throughout the week, I bookmark, like, hey, that'll be fun to talk about Sunday if I don't have anything. That'll be fun. And then by the end of the week, I've got like 40 bookmarks. I'm like, oh, and most of these things have moved on. We're not even talking about the thing that happened Tuesday, whatever that was, which I'm sure was something big. We move so quickly through the headlines. And I don't know if it's always been like that or we just notice now because we have the internet and we have a constant news feed cycle going on. But it's never ending and it never stops. You wake up in the morning and it's right in your face. And if it's not, if you're not political, God bless you, you're not paying attention. You have to at some point in time pay attention to something if it's not your pocketbook. If it's not like, holy hell, I'm having a hard time paying for groceries. At least that you can't ignore. And if you can't ignore it, it's not because of Super Bowl. And so, again, if you love the Super Bowl, you're not watching this. But this is my little sign off to you. Enjoy it, man. Bread and circuses be damned. Enjoy it, because after the Super Bowl, I don't know what's after that. Baseball? What's that? The World Series? That'll be your next thing. That's months down the line. It's almost like as if we abolished. And I hate Valentine's Day. That's this week. I think it's a dumb made up holiday. But once you start realizing, like, especially if you're in the North, live in the Northeast, winter is brutal. And then here's the worst part about winter. You don't really get much of one all the way up to Christmas. All the Christmas movies where they're like, it's 12 feet of snow and everyone's got lights and it's the holidays and this is what winter should, white Christmas is. We don't get snow. We don't get snow until literally after Christmas. When you're taking the lights down, the Christmas tree's out, you know, out back or by the side of the road. Then it's like, oh, now we're getting your white Christmas. And you've already celebrated. And now you're just ready for it to be over with. You wanted the Christmas and the winter time and all that stuff all the way up to Christmas. Come New Year's, let's move on with it. Let's get back to spring. Nope, that's when winter starts. And so I think, oh, and that's why Valentine's Day is important. It's important to have holidays. It's very important to be able to celebrate things, even if they seem arbitrary. Those things are important to keep your head out above water. Keep your head up. I just had this conversation with a friend of mine, the guy who helped edit and his wife, they helped edit the book that I'm publishing tomorrow. And I had a conversation with him. I'm such a busybody that even when it came down to like, all right, book's coming out, got some promo stuff to do. I'm going to put all this together, but it's set to publish, ready to go. And I even told him, I was like, here's the next project I'm working on. And I realized in that conversation with him that I didn't even take a second to celebrate. And this is the accumulation of a decade. And I was just like, all right, that's done. Next thing. And I'm notorious for not celebrating stuff because it's not in my nature. I don't think about it. I don't even care about, to be honest, birthdays are a scam. I think birthdays are dumb, but I understand why they're important. And I think the same thing with all of these particular holidays, Super Bowl included. Even if you're not a fan of it, I still think it's important for those people to have that respite between all of the chaos that they're dealing with on their everyday life. So is it a deep state psyop to distract? Sure, but it only does it for like, what, an hour or two? Because I guarantee Monday morning, it's going to be some kind of a press conference and someone's going to flub or something's going to happen or another war is going to start and you're going to be right back in the middle of it, right back at ground zero. And you had one day to sit there and pretend that your little action figures on the screen are doing something important. Good. Give it to them. Let them have it. Same thing with me. I love my Marvel stuff. It's an escape. It's respite. It's important. And while I would say, here's my little biblical PSA. Finding joy even in those times is important. And I think living a life of joy, even when the chaos is happening around you, is something that you probably will only find, in Christianity. I'm not going to go super deep into that. But there is a life, I mean, to live is Christ, to die is gain. That principle of looking at life as it all having meaning and moving forward toward and just participating in life itself is a bit of act of worship, brings in gratitude. And so even during the chaos, you can have joy through even the hard times because of the gratitude of knowing that even the experience of life and all of its tremendous horrifics, that transcendental meaning that comes from a God outside of our world, gives you the ability to have joy throughout it all. That sounds super profound. You can get that in my new book, By Every Meaningless Measure. Art and Poetry has meditations like that in it. Now you have to kind of read into it because there's a lot of art with scripture, but another plug for the book. All right, so enough of my rant about the Super Bowl, bread and circuses. It is what it is. Again, don't care. I don't care that Taylor Swift is there. I don't know if it was a psyop. That was a big topic. I don't know if it's still around. If people even talking about it, does it matter? People love halftime shows. Half the wives of these football junkies, they sit around. They deal with the football part because of the halftime show. It's entertainment. They love that. Let them have it. because it's, again, Monday, you got screaming kids, you got bills to pay. It's going to be a pain. I know this is not what most people like to talk about. They're like, no, this is definitely a psyop. This is the government's trying to distract everybody from whatever. And then if something big does happen, like Project Bluebeam, aliens come down, they're like, oh, they're talking about aliens. They're distracting from something. Like, well, Tucker's interviewing Putin. Oh, but that's a distraction from whatever the other thing is. And the other thing that we're talking about, that being a distraction of, is a distraction from the other thing. Constant 8D chess that the elites, the cabal, are playing. You're never going to keep up. Everything is just another psyop of that other thing that you thought wasn't a psyop. You can't live like that. You can't. And I'm telling you now, if you do, you're going down a bad path. You have to have that respite. You have to have your at least bit of entertainment. I do not like, oh, here's the juxtaposition. It's a pendulum swing. Everything's a trade-off, Thomas Sowell said. I think it was Thomas Sowell. Everything's a trade-off. Because that the more you trade off the constant, like, I'm never going to, that's a bad example. I shouldn't say trade off, but basically whatever you trade is going to be vacuumed in by something else. And so if you say, well, I'm putting off football this year, you're just going to bring in something else into that spot. It's even the idea of worship, and people say, well, I'm an atheist, I don't have a God to worship. Yeah, you do. That God just most likely is yourself or Richard Dawkins, whoever you look up to, that elite intellect, that I'm smarter than all these other people who believe in a mystical power. You just assume yourself as God. You are the ultimate ideal of what it means to think beyond all things in front of you. It's a transcendent field. It's idol worship, but basically it's worship. So everybody worships. So that pendulum swing can go both ways. If you're all about football and you're not paying attention to anything going on around you, that is awful. I haven't met anybody like that. I don't hang around those circles. So maybe you know somebody it's like, I got a buddy, Jim. He has his wife's marriage, his whole marriage is falling apart. Kids are going, but he loves that football. There is that pendulum swing. There's someone over there who's using nothing but distractions to avoid dealing with the problems that are at hand that they really need to focus in on. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about your average person, average news junkie, average political person, average person that's paying attention to the world around them, that reads any kind of news or any headlines. A respite is delicious. We are going to talk about Deadpool. I didn't want to make this one long because I really just hopped on to share my thoughts on the Super Bowl and promote my book coming out tomorrow, By Every Meaningless Measure. You can find that at Amazon. Let's talk about Deadpool real quick. I'm going to attempt to do this. I don't know if this is going to shut me down, so I'm going to talk. We're going to watch the trailer, and I'm going to point out a few things. I am, before we even get to it, number one, so stupidly stoked for Deadpool for a few reasons. I've already watched the trailer, so it isn't like hopefully you've already watched it, but we're going to watch it together. I'm not a breakdown guy for that much, but I'm going to do my attempt. I just want to watch it again. Let's be honest. It looks great. I love it. Again, I give Marvel, my grace is abundant for Marvel. They can do wrong, and I point that out all the time, but I really am gunning for them. I want them to do good things. I want them to be good. I want them to be good. I want them to be Iron Man 1. Let's go back. Let's go back in time. I love that. And so we're going to watch this. I think they're on that track. I think this trailer looks like they're going to be doing some big change-ups. And now every trailer for the past Phase 5 has been like, oh my God, they're changing everything. They're bringing in the X-Men. Finally, we're actually outside of Multiverse of Madness, where we got some of the X-Men. We're getting the X-Men. I don't know if it's permanent. It does kind of feel like this might be another red herring, be like, oh, we're going to give you what you want. No, we're not. It's just a one-off. You're never going to see this again. We're going to watch it. I want you to tell me what your thoughts are. I'm going to pull this up. I'm hoping it plays this time around. So let's see what we got going on.
Birthday to you.
All right. Okay.
It's been a challenging few years, for sure. But I'm happy. That is because of each and every one of you. I'm the luckiest man alive.
Make a wish, buddy.
Wilson?
Who's asking?
All right, I'm stopping it because I don't know what the rules are on this, but let's talk about this real quick. Straight up TVA. So they're bringing in the TVA. If you don't know, the TVA is a big part of the whole Loki series. Basically, when the whole timelines where they brought the multiverse in, the TVA was there to make sure there was one sacred timeline and it would prune all the other timelines that weren't supposed to belong. So I can't tell if this is after Loki. I'm going to presume it's after Loki season two, where the TVA is still involved. They're still participating. They're still there and they're functioning, but they're really just focusing on Kangs because Kang was supposed to be the big thing. The next big Marvel Avengers was Kang Dynasty. So it's supposed to be focusing on Kangs. Now, this does feel like it could be before because of what's about to happen in the trailer. But I did want to point out, I love the fact they're bringing the TVA in because it feels like a reboot. Now, the thing with the TVA is let's just continue to watch it. Oh, and here's another reason why this makes important. I think this Deadpool is a variant. Now, I don't know what they're going to do with variants, and I'm having a hard time with it because I would want to say that this Deadpool is a Nexus character, meaning he is the same in every universe. Same with Wanda Maximoff. She is the Scarlet Witch in every universe. Now, there's obviously different Wanda Maximoffs, and there's probably different Wade Wilsons, but they are always Deadpool. You can't flip-flop like Spider-Man, where, you know, Peter Parker is just a photographer in one universe and Miles Morales is a Spider-Man. You can't do that. He's a Nexus character. I think that's what Deadpool is. Now, this most likely is a variant because all of that intro, his girlfriend, she's obviously, spoiler alert, dead. She died, I think, in Deadpool 2 or maybe 1. I don't know. I have to go back and rewatch those. But she's dead. I'm pretty sure a lot of those characters aren't around anymore. So this obviously would be a variant. Let's continue to watch. Just wanted to point that out.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Is that supposed to be scary? Pegging isn't new for me, friendo, but it is for Disney.
Hi-yo, breaking the fourth wall. I got to do this as a disclaimer. I ranted so hard about She-Hulk doing this. I hated the fact that She-Hulk actually traversed the multiverses all the way into the Marvel Studios where it's written. I hated it. I ranted for months, and I still hate it. I still absolutely hate it. I understand breaking the fourth wall. And I'm giving Deadpool grace because it always felt outside of the MCU universe. This is conflicting. I feel contradicted on the way I feel about She-Hulk. Maybe I am a misogynist. Maybe that's just how it turned out. I just hate She-Hulk as a character and I love Deadpool. But this part, the breaking the fourth wall, is fun for the movie experience, but it is hard for me to feel like it's part of the MCU. And that's going to be brought up in just a minute. Let's take a look.
Mr. Wilson, you appear to have soiled yourself while unconscious.
I wasn't unconscious. Who are you?
Freaking love. I love it.
Why am I here?
Walk with me. Wait.
The fact that you can play Van Wilder in every film is amazing.
This is your chance.
I love
to be a hero among heroes.
Oh, let's bring up the idea. I love the fact, that the boy from Succession is here. And he's running to feels like the same character, except for he's got a British accent. Love they brought him in. Don't know where he plays into the TVA. I wish we would have saw a glimpse of him during Loki, but we didn't. And so he's a new character. Again, I don't know where this lands with Loki. I hope we find out. But yeah, let's continue.
Ben Sensei. Your little cinematic universe is about to change forever. I'm the Messiah.
About to change forever. That's the thing I think they're rebooting this whole thing.
Marvel Jesus.
Now that I talked to my wife about, and I was like, well, does this mean he's bringing people back? It also kind of alluded to the idea that he might be joining up with the Avengers in the past, because they obviously TVA can time travel and go affect things at different things. That's why I'm leaning towards this is after the Loki season two. Loki has all of the timelines he's gathered together. I think, God, I hope Loki shows up in this, but we're going to continue. I think this is a reboot of the MCU. I think this is how they're going to tie in the whole X-Men in with the normal MCU. I love if it is a reboot and they're going to start playing some weird games with different character swaps that they just showed. I can try to go back. They just showed all the Avengers. Let's see where that was. It was just like 2 seconds ago. They just showed all the Avengers.
Ah!
Hold on, does that look like 21st Century Fox logo? Tell me that's what that was. Does that not look like the 21st? Is that, what am I looking at there? What is that? Yeah, 20th Century Fox. That's what that is. That's the 20th Century Fox logo in the sand. So I'm about to point out one other thing. So I think, man, this is a spoiler. I think he's in the world beyond with Eliath that Loki had to defeat to get to the place where he who remains, that whole at the end of time. I think that's where Deadpool is, and I'll show you real quick. Eliath, right there. Oh, that was that blue smoke that came down. That was the big thing guarding he who remains at the end of time. Eliath, he would, everything that got zapped into the void. Oh, the void, that's what it's called. Eliath would come and eat them up. So everything that got removed and picked from the timeline that wasn't the sacred timeline would end up here in the void, and Eliath would just devour everything in there. So I'm pretty sure that's where he is. That's what he's seeing. That's what that was just now.
God, I love this part.
Wait!
Don't just stand there, you ape. Give me a hand up. Nope, I'm actually okay. Thank you very much.
Six, which is 2 days after my birthday. I'm super excited about that. All right, back to the anyway. Oh, why is that brownstone? All right, sorry about that. Yeah, so I think they're gonna reboot a lot of the stuff. I think they might be changing up the MCU completely from where it's gone, because I think it's fallen off the rails. So if they were going to do something, this would be it, especially because he breaks the fourth wall. Obviously, we're in the void, the 21st Century logo in the background, Eliath sweeping down, eating up these people. There's a big section. Obviously, he's in the void. Something's going to happen with the timelines. I'm hoping Loki's already involved. I hope he shows up in this. I hope we get a cohesive story timeline after this, instead of all this wonky multiverse crap everywhere. I hope we're done. I hope we're done with that. Maybe Secret Wars is going to involve that, but this ties into it. I just want, for the love of God, for Marvel to start tying these stupid things together. We need that. And if anything was going to bring unity to this country and to our culture, it would be a cohesive Avengers story. One that brings in all the characters together instead of all this. This Marvel is an amalgamation of how our culture feels. Everyone's got their own topics, their own thing, their own storyline. Everybody's the main character. No one cares about anyone else. There is no team up. There's no unification. And I think that's it. The unification of America died with Infinity War. There, I said it. Tony Stark, America died with Tony Stark. Because since then, we haven't seen anything amazing come out of Marvel other than maybe Guardians 3 and all the series. Loki was great too, a few of those, but nothing good, nothing that solidifies the whole brand and brings you back. I want to be brought back to a Marvel I can be proud of. And I think Deadpool 3 is going to do it. Now, there is most likely the chance that Deadpool 3 is, again, a one-off just to play into the Wolverine thing. I know that's the big thing everybody wanted to see. Hugh Jackman coming back as Wolverine in the original, the hardcore comic book suit. People love that stuff. I'm more here for what is about to happen to the timeline, because I feel like if I was Marvel, Kevin Feige, the thing I would be focusing on is how to bring everybody back to a cohesive story where everybody can be involved and get on board. And that is only going to happen with something tying everything else together, since it feels like nothing's tied together. Anyway, thanks for tuning in this live. Again, I'll start on time next time, hopefully. Every Sunday, 8, 7 Central. So 8 on the eastern side where I'm at. As promised, promote my book one more time. By Every Meaningless Measure, Art of Poetry. A Book of Art and Poetry. Well, you can tell I'm coming to the end of this live stream, messing up my words. For all my viewers of this live stream, and whoever watches this afterwards, I'm going to give you a little insight. Maybe it's Monday already, but maybe it's just later on Sunday night. There's a little secret inside baseball. If you go to Amazon right now, at this moment, and you go to the search bar and you type in by every meaningless measure, this book will pop up and you can purchase it. That's just for you guys. But to give you a little insight, I'm going to read a poetry, one of the poems in this, the shortest poem. So I know how much you guys love poetry. You know, poetry is a big thing. I'm going to read you the shortest poem. I think it's the shortest. It's one of the shortest. There's not that many short ones. Most of them are like, you'll find out. They're long. Here's a short one I wrote. And I love this one. It's one of my favorite ones because it's short. Everybody likes a short poem. And it rhymes. That was the other thing about the poetry book that most people don't do anymore. I know rhyming feels like a kid's book. Here's a small rant. I get poetry when it rhymes. It feels like either song lyrics or a storybook for kids. And if you want sophisticated poetry, you dig deep down in the soul and you slap words together that feel powerful, but none of them rhyme. Because if you rhyme, then it downplays it. I don't know. Tolkien rhymed all of his stuff. I think we should bring rhyming poetry back. To me, it actually feels like it's harder. And it feels better. I like rhyming poetry. So all of the poems, it's not your kind of poetry where you get in and it's like dog, cat, whistling, time, circles, multiple circles, heart bleeding, don't know where I am, the end. It's nothing like that. It's good. Anyway, here's a good example. Let you know what it is. Shortest one I got. It's called Shallow Sands. My shame is buried shallow beneath shifting sands. My failures feel more real than the scars on your hands. And that's it. That's the shortest one in there. And it's one of my favorites. Because it deals with dealing with being a part of the chaos in the world. And the way society falls apart. And feeling like you are part of that failure. That you are playing your own failure part. And how that feels way more real than the redemptive story of the Gospels. And even in that Thomas story where, you know, Jesus comes back from the dead and he's raised again. And doubting Thomas is there. And it's like, how do I know that you were him? And he tells him to feel the scars on his hands from when he was crucified. That's a poem about that, where my failures feel way more real than feeling the scars on Christ's hands, knowing that my failures are redeemed through the gospel story. So stuff like that. I understand poetry is not everybody's jam. I understand theology is not everybody's jam, but it deals with a lot of real world experiences, which is what I talk about on the back, and realities that we all do live through because everyone has failures. And so there's a lot of that stuff in there. Hope you enjoyed it. Anyway, thanks for tuning into this live stream part of the live. I have a guest this week. We're going to record it tomorrow and it'll be out hopefully this week. And then I'll be back. Pardonable Live next week. Go buy my book. Make me proud. Again, been hanging out with this thing for quite some time. Been super excited about it. Feeling great. Feeling like a published poet, as my title says. Don't forget to like and subscribe and do all that jazz. All right. Love you guys.